Morning, everybody. Welcome to the Fisherman Ministry, Northfield, Vermont. From the rising of the sun to the going down of the same, my Lord's name is to be praised. Matthew 13, from verse 44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had, and bought it. Verse 44, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in a field. That's us. That's the seed of Adam. That's the world, for God so loved the world. The which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he had, and buyeth that field. That's what God did for us. He sold all that he had. He gave all that he had, his son, for us. Again, verse 45, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls. That's us. We're the merchant man looking for goodly pearls, things that are valuable. Who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. I put a question to you, which is, of how much worth is Jesus Christ to you? He is the goodly pearl that is incomparable to anything else. There is no treasure that compares to him. There is no toy that compares to him. There is no car, there is no job, there is no spouse, no person, no, you fill in the blanks. How much is it worth? How much is he worth? How much is his blood worth? How much is his grace worth? A merchant man, just a person, any old person, any young person, just anybody, any one of us, every one of us. Are we looking for what's valuable? Because if we are, we won't find it here. We will find it in his word. That is where the things that are valuable are found. Proverbs somewhere. It's probably right in the beginning, I think. Talks about just that same thing. Seeking for it with all, everything that you have. Chapter 2 of Proverbs. We'll start at the beginning. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver, and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous, he is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment, and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil, and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths, to deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth, and forgetteth the covenant of her God. If thou seekest her, wisdom, as silver, and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, and find the knowledge of God. Wisdom, we know from other places, is talked of as Jesus. If you seek him and search for him as that pearl of great price, then, only then, you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. The fear of the Lord is a good thing. It is the only good fear. The fear of the Lord, because he's the one who at the end of the day, not the day, the life that you have, he's the one who will tell you, welcome in, good and faithful servant, or get away from me, worker of iniquity, I never knew you. But what he's going to say is our choice. It's just the evidence of what we have already chosen. We have life. Right now, this is our opportunity to seek for the Lord and his ways as for that pearl of great price, because it is priceless, and yet it is free and available to every one of us.
It's free and available, but if you notice there, it does cost you something. Your life. But the beauty is, if you'll give up your life for him, then you get to partake of his life, which far exceeds any life anyone has ever lived on this earth. Far exceeds. You know, there are a couple things here, and I was remembering as Megan was sharing this, the story of the merchant man who goes out. I mean, people who knew me, my sister Robinson, who knew me before I came to know the Lord, of anybody here. But Robin knows I traveled all over the world, and I read widely all over every different kind of thing. And I did this, in a sense, because I was a man searching for that pearl of great price. And everywhere I went, I didn't find it. It was very disappointing because I always had such great anticipation that every time I turned to a different thing that I was going to find it. And I remember when I found it, and it was an interesting thing. I remember when I received the Lord, when I realized that, wait a second, this thing that I had thought was the least likely thing to be true was actually true. I did sell all that I have, essentially. I gave up everything I had. And what happened on the back side of that, anybody who, Carrie would have known this, and Robin would have known this, and some of the people listening out there would have known this. And I tore into this word. I tore into this word. Like there was nothing else that there was in the entire universe other than this word. And I tore into this word. I mean, I read the word aloud. I mean, you know, Davy used to say, back then we didn't have the cassette tapes and the different things of it. He said, you know, read it aloud to yourself in a corner. So I'd go into a corner, like right back over there in the corner back there, and I'd be there at 6:30 in the morning, And I would read the word aloud to myself in that corner. I read the entire word aloud to myself. I think I read the New Testament like 4 times in the first month or two. Read the entire Bible aloud to myself easily in the first year. I probably have read the Bible aloud to myself in its entirety at least twice, and I've listened to it numerous times. You know, I'm not sure. But it was a thing that obviously it was something that immediately when I saw that, I wanted to know all about the Lord. I wanted to know all about Him, and I wanted to know what He had. And when I'd hit downtimes, I mean, several years in, hit a real downtime, was wondering if I'd made a big mistake and doing the wrong thing and what I did, and Charlie was living with me then, and you kind of remember it perhaps, although nobody was a witness to this, mind you. I mean, if people were a witness, they were a witness to what the Lord did with me, not me reading. I was always alone when I was doing that, always alone. But I tore into that word. I decided I was angry. I was furious, you might say. I was furious that, first of all, did I make a mistake? Because if I made a mistake, it was a doozy. I mean, it was a real doozy. And it would have been easy for me at that time to just depart. Very easy. Because there was nobody who I was around at the time who to me gave me any source of encouragement or hope in Christ Jesus. Okay, now don't hear me wrong. I don't mean to put Davy in that category, but Davy was down in South Carolina, and the people I was with amongst the brethren in Vermont, not a single person gave me any hope. And I was angry. And so I determined, I got down on my knees and I got down into that corner and I started reading. I started reading. I started reading. I started reading. I started searching. I need to find out. I need to find out whether I made a mistake. I need to find out. And I had to still work. I still had to do all the different things I had to do, but I needed to find out. I just needed to. And I remember in the midst of that, there was a time, I forget exactly when it was, but I mean, it was a big struggle, and I started fasting. And I started fasting, and I was working. You know, it wasn't a fast where I got all holy and I was all by myself or anything. It was a fast where I still ran Dog River, was over there with the guys and doing all the different things and dealing with clients and all the stuff that was going on. And I was fasting. And the Lord really blessed me in this fast. And it's the last time I really fasted. And this is over 10 years ago. I mean, it's been a while. And I was fasting. And I was coming home from work one day. Everybody had gone home earlier. And I was coming home because I was coming home late because I didn't want to be there with them while they were eating dinner. I was driving up on, I think I was on the interstate. I think I was coming down from exit 5 back down to where we were living on Western Ave at the time. And I was up on the interstate, and I was driving, I was praising the Lord, and I had such an abundance of energy. I mean, a supernatural abundance of energy is all I can describe it to you. Like, if you had, you know, when you think of taking like a couple cups of espresso or really strong coffee right in a row, but instead of being like on a buzz where you're like shaking, more energy than that, and yet completely, perfectly at peace and calm and everything else. And I was saying to myself, you know, Lord, eating is so passe. I don't think I want to go back to it. This is awesome, man. This is awesome. This is better than eating, you know. I was thinking, you know, porterhouse steaks. I was thinking of nice food. This is better than that, you know what I'm saying? And just as I was thinking that in my own heart and mind, the Lord showed me, He said to me, He said, Steve, in the exact same way I am with you right now, in the exact same way, where there is no mistaking at all His presence with me, because there is no way that 3 days in or whatever it was, I think it was 3 days in on this fast, that you would actually have more abundant energy and working full time, working your butt off and doing everything. There's no way. There's no way. And the fact that the presence of the Lord was so obvious and so plain, and His statement to me was, the same way I am with you right now, I was with you on the day you started, before you started this fast. I was with you before. I was with you that whole time you were going down and wondering whether I was real and you'd made a big mistake. I was with you the entire time in the exact same way that I am with you right now. No difference. And I share this with you, folks, because we do have a choice. And I tell you, there are times when I don't want to make the choice God wants me to make. I mean, it is about the least thing I want to do in the entire universe is do what he would tell me to do. Anybody else ever had that experience? Ever anybody else have that feeling? No, that's one thing I'll never do. You know what I'm saying? First of all, never in the Lord. You'll find out as a Christian that never word goes out the window. Goes right flying out the window, nowhere to be found again. Because what happens is the Lord loves us. He loves us. And so he works with us right where we are. But if you really want to serve the Lord, you have to invite him. He's not going to come in and do it regardless of your will. If he did things against our will, then you know we would just be, yes, master robots moving through this earth. You know what I'm saying? It would be like the kind of horror picture vision you get from, you know, when aliens come in and take our invasion of the body snatchers or something like that from way back, or some of the other different types of things where people rule by terrorizing people like, you know, Adolf Hitler did or many other rulers today. Even today, you find that to speak against the prevailing view in this country is a thing that is... you know, for example, if you were to go to a university campus and speak against the prevailing view of our president and the like, you're going to find you'll be ostracized and hated on a university campus. You may be fine at the bar locally saying that kind of thing, people receive you, but you go to a university campus, I'll tell you what, man, you're going to find that if you're going to stick that way, you are going to be the redheaded stepchild, completely cast off and everything. And it's amazing how I've seen that work in people to turn them into people that were completely unrelated to who they were when they got there. I've seen young farmers from upstate New York growing up who come out being homosexuals and of the most. I mean, they came in speaking like men. They left speaking with a lisp that was so thick because they wanted to fit in. And they were the rejected ones. I've seen horrible things as people do this kind of stuff. And when I say invite them in, I mean it from the perspective of acknowledge that you got a problem. Truth be told, Lord, I don't really want to do that. But your word says that I should. Help me, Lord. Strengthen and fortify my will to do thy will. And you know what you'll find? He'll do just that. And he'll give you opportunities to take small steps. He's going to require you to take some steps in accordance with that. He's not going to just go, well, you know what, okay, you've prayed, it's all done. No, no. He's going to, for example, give you a small example of how this works. This year, we took all of our children up to skiing up at Cochran's. Now, if you'd known 2 years ago, when Ruthie was three, Ruthie was hostile to a little skiing. Ruthie can sometimes get hostile to certain things, like swimming lessons. She'll sit out. You know, she kind of get that fold her arms and, no, I'm not going to do it. Yep, there it is. She just showed me the face. Now, what happened is this year, I mean, it's a big investment. I didn't really want to make the investment, to be honest with you, but I was praying about it and believe this is what the Lord would have us do, so I did it. But I sat them all down before we did so. I sat all my children down and I said, are you guys, I said, well, this is what I want to do. I want to go ahead and do this and teach you so that you can go with mommy skiing alone. So I need each of you to commit to this and to get to the place where you can go forward. Is everybody on board? They said yes. So we joined hands, did we not, children? We joined hands at the breakfast table and we prayed. And I'll tell you what, man, it has been an amazing thing to watch as those children, I mean, they were going up the big slopes. Abby, little Abby, 3 years old, going up the big slopes, coming down. yesterday and stuff like that. They went up the T-bar. Ruthie going up the T-bar and skiing down, doing the slalom like an Olympic champion going down. They had them doing these things. I mean, these things, they went, but they had to make a choice. And when they made that choice and we prayed and they went up, there were days right there at the beginning where Abby was kind of a little, I don't know about this and stuff like that, but she stuck to it. And they've all grown. Well, it's the same way with us. And I want to take you over to Matthew 5 for a moment. And it follows with what Megan was reading here. She was saying, you know, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. And the verse she read over here that I want to use as kind of my segue over to Matthew 5 is... It says, verse 9 here. But actually, let's just read it down through again. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding. See, that's your part. You cry after knowledge and lift up thy voice for understanding. Lord, help me to understand what's going on here. This is in Proverbs where she was too. I apologize. I'm going to take it down through because I want to then go over to Matthew 5 at the end. And it says, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, he will give it to you. If thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walketh uprightly. Think of that as kind of a bodyguard. Knock people out of the way who are trying to come against you in this thing. Don't let them touch you. And what he's concerned about is them touching your soul. They may touch your physical body, okay, but they ain't going to touch your soul. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. Look at that. You shall understand every good path. Anybody want to know good paths? I mean, anybody had kind of enough of bad paths that end up in heartbreak and frustration and anger and all that other stuff? Okay. And every good path, when wisdom entereth into thine heart and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul. See that? Wisdom entering into thine heart is what happens when you receive Jesus as your Lord and Savior. Jesus comes and makes his abode in your heart. Now the question is, are you going to listen to him? Or are you going to listen to others, including your old man? Right? And knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul. See, this gets down to that part of which way you're going to go. See, when it's pleasant to thy soul, when that which he shares, when this word and what it says is pleasant unto you. It's something that you prefer and you desire over other things. Okay? It says, when knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee. Okay? These are things that look in every situation. The Lord knows how to deliver you, how to keep you. He knows how to. Doesn't mean you're going to feel good in that situation, don't hear me wrong. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say you're going to feel good in that situation. You may feel pressed upon on every side. But he knows how to, that discretion will preserve, it'll keep you, that understanding that he gives you of what's going on in that situation gives you, you know what? Hope. You ever been in situations which seem hopeless and you kind of throw up your hands, you go, I don't know what to do. I don't flippin' know what to do. What a disaster this is. Anybody ever had that experience? Any parent ever had that experience? Any spouse ever have that experience? What's that? Yeah. But you follow what I'm saying? We have a good hope in Christ Jesus. And he's able to open up and give us perspective on what it is that's going on so that we can stand in the midst for those others. Now watch. To deliver thee from the way of the evil man. Remember we saw it before, preserveth the way of his saints. We saw that before. Yea, he'll make known unto us every good path. Here it says, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man. All right, and you know what comes in? You want to know the way of the evil man? It comes out very clearly. The way of the evil man is tit for tat. You do this to me, I'm going to do that to you. Now, I mean, how much do we hear ourselves even say it? If you got children, I mean, they just do it. They don't have to say it. When they say it is when you ask them about it. Well, he, which is, of course, the tat, that I mean, the tit that I might not have observed, okay? You know, they're now telling me about it, so it justifies them in their tat. Right? Isn't that how it works? That's pretty much how it works. And out here in the world, don't we hear that? As an attorney, I hear it because most things people come to me for are battles. But he did this! I'm going to do this! Right? Isn't that how it works? It's amazing. Yeah. And when you go over and look, I mean, the truth is very seldom are people walk away satisfied from that, does it? You know what I'm saying? I mean, they may win, they may this, they may that, and the different thing, but in the end, as far as something that satisfies, like that pearl of great price, nah, not there. It has a temporary thing. May give them. But it says, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. Now, it's interesting there. Leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. Now, the froward person is this. You tell them something, and what do they have? They have a better way. Anybody ever run across that? I mean, for example, Charlie used to work for me at Dog River. And when Charlie worked for me at Dog River, this was it. Hey, Charlie, can you do this? How about if I do that? That's not what I asked. Did that used to happen, Charlie? This isn't a Senate hearing, Mister. Excuse me.
Your father. I'm sure it's true.
But I mean, think about it, folks. I mean, and how much does this come up in the Lord with you? You read the word, and a minister says unto you, "Hey, do this." Well, I'll do this. Yeah, I'll do this other thing. You change it. I've got a little one right here. Is wearing a black little blouse that is always that way. You know, Abby. Come here, can you pick that up? I'll pick this up. No, I said pick that up. I'll pick this up. See, so it's something that's very natural to us. This is not something that's like other people have this problem. This is something we've got a problem with. We've got a problem with. We add to it, we take away, we change it to suit ourselves. All right, this is leaving the paths of righteousness, okay, the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, which is what that is. See, the word is a lamp unto our feet, the scripture says. When you depart from it, that lamp isn't there to show you whether you're going to run into something or stumble, is it? You got to come back to it to get back in the light. So, it says, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths. All right. So what happens is, and this is a very common thing, is you have people who come to know the truth. Something happens that they don't like, and they decide to separate themselves. Okay? They decide to separate themselves. And then what they do is they justify themselves in their separation with a bunch of different things. Okay? Doesn't matter. They justify themselves in their separation with a bunch of different things. And as they do that, they then get others who likewise want to be justified and don't want to obey the truth to join with them. Something happens all the time. And you know what the church is full of? Ministers and congregants who do such things. I mean, and they end up getting high positions often in these churches. I mean, you've seen it, Rob, and you've seen it, Carrie. You know, people come through here and received and learned and stuff like that and everything. And then something happens that offends them, and they leave, and they go and they join some other church, right? And they go and they join some other church, and you know, they're exalted in that other church, aren't they? They get these things and everything, and everybody looks up to them. And because everybody looks up to them and they get things, they feel even more justified in what they're doing than ever before. And it gets to the place where what happens is they can't even remember the truth. They can't even remember the truth. Okay? Don't even recognize it. They're so pleased with the way in which everybody else is receiving them now. Now, I wanted to turn over to Matthew 5, I think it's like 44 or something like that. This is the part of the Sermon on the Mount, and it talks about, some people call it the Beatitudes, which basically means it's contrary to the don't be attitudes. You know what I mean? It's the attitudes we're supposed to have versus the one we usually have. Now, if you read the Beatitudes, folks, you're going to read it, and I encourage you all to read it. They start over in, where is it, about Matthew 5. Yeah, it's in Matthew 5. It begins over there. The Beatitudes, you start reading that, and you're going to start realizing, I'm the don't be attitude. Yeah. Now, the question you have in that, when you find out that you're the don't be attitude, is how do you deal with that? Do you take offense at the fact that you're the don't be attitude? Or do you realize, you know what? The be attitude's actually far better than my don't be attitude. And when you realize that it's far better, then you can go, you know what, Lord, help me to get shed of my don't be attitudes and to adopt the be attitudes. And we were talking here, and the reason why this segue, if you will, is important is you're talking about keeping you from the path of the evil man. Okay, let's go over here. Verse 43, ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. And pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Look at that. Do you want to be the child of your Father which is in heaven? I mean, isn't that what it's all about? If we're not his, then we're nothing. All right? So it says, you're to do these things if you want to be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Now watch this. For he maketh the sun to rise on the evil and on the good. Isn't that the truth? Okay? And sendeth rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? What reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. Wow. We're to be what? But nobody's perfect, right? And you notice this is the end of it. So this is like, you go through all the other Beatitudes, and then you come to this Beatitude. So you can kind of think of this as like the icing on the cake, or if you think of climbing the mountain, it's the snow cap on top or whatever. You know what I'm saying? That makes it beautiful when you look out at it and everything. But it'd be Kilimanjaro out there in Kenya or what have you. See that snow peak up there and everything? It's beautiful, isn't it? That's how this is to the Lord. And you can only do this. Okay, you can only do this when, first of all, you recognize what Christ has saved you from. You know what I mean? If you think that you're a Christian because somehow you're worthy of being a Christian, then, of course, you're not going to be able to do this. But if you recognize that the only reason why you're a Christian is because of what Christ did for you, nothing you can speak of for yourself, well then, first of all, when you look out at other people, you know what? You know that his death on the cross is sufficient for them too. You know it's sufficient for them. And see, the Lord, can you imagine if from day one of our life, if we did that which was evil
We were just smited. Ye mighty smiter, as it says in Bruce Almighty or whatever. Smite me, you almighty smiter, or something like that, kind of funny line. You know, can you imagine? I mean, nobody would make it. But God is long-suffering towards us. So he allows people to go through until they hopefully find that pearl of great price. And how are they going to find that pearl of great price unless you're willing to tell them? Show it to them. Look, let me show you. I found a pearl of great price. I can see that you're angry. I can see that you're full of hatred. I can see that you're unhappy. I can see these things. You don't have to be that way. You don't have to be that way. There's somebody who's paid the price for you, who died for you, who can take all that away if you'll let him. His name is Jesus. His name is Jesus. And so when you share that, and they look at you and they're thinking, wait a second, but I've done nothing good to you. I haven't treated you well. Hey, I haven't treated other people well. And I didn't treat you well either for a long time. I thought I treated you well, but I actually didn't. And so what you do is you get down to a place where you become the embodiment to that individual of the love of God and the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because they can see that you're sincere. You don't harbor any ill will towards them for that which they have done. And therefore, it makes it easy for them to receive. Because you're not requiring anything of them. You're just letting them know what Jesus did. And if they'll decide that they want to turn from that way they're on and embrace him, it's all gone. And what you have is you actually have a love that comes on the other side of that. That is a bond that cannot be broken. One of the most beautiful stories I ever heard of this in this work, and there's a bunch of them because I'm also a sucker for redemption stories, so I love them. But there was one that I found particularly beautiful, and it was a black man from New York City who had been a heroin dealer. He was a heroin user too, but he was also a dealer. This was many years ago. He was a heroin dealer, and he had gotten caught and got thrown in prison. And in prison, you know, if you've ever dealt with people who are drug dealers, and I have, it's a business. And it's a bloody business. And the reason why it's a bloody business is because you can't go to your local judge or police officer and go, hey, that guy's taking my territory, or he's stealing my client, or he's moved in on my supplier. And because of that, that means you kill people, or you frighten them as best you can so that they move away. And I've talked to drug dealers, I've known drug dealers, and they've talked to me honestly about this stuff. And he was, so he goes into jail. And of course, other drug dealers from rival groups also were in jail. So you know what that meant. They didn't like one another in jail any better than they liked one another outside of jail. And so people died. I've had clients who killed men in jail with the bare hands. These guys were in jail, and they hated one another. Hated one another. And this guy gets out of jail, and he realizes, you know what, New York's a little bit hot right now, man. They're on to me over here. But he still had his connections for heroin, so he decided to go out to Houston, Texas. Figured that's a much better place. So he goes out there, and he got this delivery in of some fresh
heroin, and of course, what are you going to do if you enjoy using it as well as selling it? You're going to try out the what you just got. So he has all his junkie friends around him, and he shoots up, and as he's shooting up, he realized, uh-oh. He knew instantaneously as he was shooting up that this was probably going to be the end of him. And he had a grandmother who was a Christian. And as he's expiring, he says, he sees his grandmother speaking to him, going, "Ask Jesus for help." And so as he's expiring, he says, "Lord," he said, "then if you have any love for me, and if there be any truth in your word, I pray that you'll save me." Lights out. He wakes up, he's not sure how much longer it's been. It's obviously been hours, if not days. And he wakes up in the spot he'd been, and all of his money was gone. All of his drugs were gone. Okay. So were all his friends. And he's there, and what he does is he opens up his eyes, and there's a business card on his chest. And it says, "Come to this place at like 8 p.m. on whatever night." And he goes there, and he's in Houston, Texas, and he goes there, and he opens up the door, and he sees white guys and black guys and Hispanic guys, and they're hugging one another. And he's immediately like, "What in the hell is this, man? I've never seen anything like this." And then he hears from across the room this scream, "Thank God you're here." And you know who it was? It was the guy who had been his mortal enemy, a rival drug dealer. He was the one who had left the card on his chest. And he took him into his home. And as he went through the withdrawals, he stayed with him. And he took care of him. He cleaned up his vomit. He watched him as he went through the fevers and the shakes and all the different things, and he took care of him every step of the way. And that man then went and took care of others who were in the same situation. See, when you know what Jesus has done for you, then I don't care what's happened in the past. I don't care what kind of thing that's happened. I do understand not feeling like doing this. Don't hear me wrong. I completely understand not feeling like doing this. I mean, I just laid out a story that's beautiful, and we all go, "Yeah, I'd like to do that story." Well, you know, it's one thing to say I'd like to do that story. It's another one thing that when you're struggling yourself with your anger and your frustration and your bitterness and all the different things. Now, let me ask you something real quick, though, before we go on. Anger, frustration, bitterness. Boy, who wants those? I mean, let me think about it for a moment. Let's see. I could wake up and be angry, frustrated, and bitter. And you know what happens is we are those things because we hang on to it. We hang on to it. We don't have to. The Lord wants to take it away. And do I get not wanting to? Because first of all, see, one of the things we run through, remember the tit for tat thing, which basically means, you know, if I don't do what I did, then that makes the other person right, correct? No. Man, out here in society, you know what's almost always the case? Both people are wrong. That's almost always what it is. But the fact of the matter is, if I lay down my thinking that I'm right and think that such another person then makes them right, no, it doesn't do that. This is one of the things. The fact of the matter is, this is if you want to get free, it doesn't matter about the other person. It doesn't matter about them. It doesn't matter whether they're right or wrong or anything. What matters about you. You're the one who matters in the thing because you're frustrated, bitter, and angry. Well, that freaking sucks. So if you want to get free of it, you get down on your knees and you go, "Lord, help me, man. Help me. Help me. Help me. Help me."
And you know what? He'll help you. And you'll get free of it. And when you get free of it, then you can go for it. Then there's nothing that can stop you then. I mean, what can stop you? If what other people do to you no longer rules you? I mean, give me a break. If what other people do to you no longer rules you, what power does anybody have over you? Do they have any power over you? Nah. Now you can be perfect. Even as our Father which is in heaven is perfect. Because it's no longer about you, and it's no longer about what other people do. It's about Him. You follow what I'm saying? And when it's about Him, you know what? Jesus said before He went to the cross, He said, Father, glorify Thou me, that I may glorify Thee. You want to see the Father glorified? You want to see the Word of God magnified? You get to that same place where Jesus was. And you know what He had to say right before that? He said, Father, man, if it be possible to take this cup away, please take it away. You know what cup He was talking about? Going to the cross. If there be any way you could take this away from me so I don't have to do it, please take it. Nevertheless, not my will, but Thy will be done. You follow what I'm saying? So Jesus understands what this is about. He understands. He understands it more than any of us understand it. I can tell you, He can help you. He can get you through this. And we can kick some butt. Wouldn't you like to kick some butt instead of having your butt kicked? Anybody want to do that? I say, let's do that. Amen. All right, folks. May the Lord bless you.